Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Vedati Sapadantikam. Manisiko Patubis Cha Kripasindu Baeva Cha Patitanam Pabinego Vaishnava Namo Namah. The demigods continued their prayers after speaking of the position of that Supreme Lord who is currently within the womb of Mother Devaki. That still, aside from him being there, and it's interesting to in Kapila Muni's words to his mother, Devahuti, is describing the horrible, difficult, terrible position of the child within the womb. How difficult it is. But yet, when the Supreme Lord is within the womb, then it is not difficult at all. He is not within a material womb. He is only and always in the spiritual world. And there's a purport right at the end that we'll read that describes that sometimes in the beginning of this this chapter was described possibly even the last the beginning of this chapter was described how Krishna first entered the mind of Vasudeva and then he was transferred to the mind of Devaki, but here it's talking about him being in the womb. So I believe it's Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur will explain that for him, for Krishna, there's no difficulty transferring himself from the mind to the womb. He's the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything is resting upon him, and therefore the demigods are praying that one should take shelter of him. This is text 32. And that taking shelter we heard about yesterday, taking shelter meaning focusing one's consciousness upon him and not depending on anything other than him. So text 32, a very famous verse. Prabhupada would quote this very often. Ye nye arvindakshava mukti maninas twayasta bhavad avashudha bhudaya aruha kuschena param padam tata patyanta do andrita yusmar angrai. This verse is used to explain how the impersonalists, they fall down from their impersonal realization. So Prabhupada's translation begins with a question after describing taking shelter of the Lord in devotional service. A question arises. Someone may say that aside from devotees who always seek shelter at the Lord's lotus feet, this is what it means to be a devotee. As Maharaj Kulashekar prayed, Krishna Tadhiya, Parapara Pankaja, like this swan likes to entangle its neck around the stem of the lotus, let my mind be entangled always at your lotus feet. Very attractive lotus feet. So devotees, this is the viewpoint of devotees. But someone may say that there are those who are not devotees, but who have accepted different processes for attaining salvation. What happens to them? They're using the yogic abilities, they're using their jnanic meditations, they're using so many different processes. What happens to them? In answer to that question, Lord Brahma and the other demigods said, O lotus-eyed Lord, although non-devotees who accept severe austerities and penances to achieve the highest position may think themselves liberated, their intelligence is impure. They fall down from their position of imagined superiority because they have no regard for your lotus feet. So this is what happens to them, because they have their vimukta maninas. They are liberated only in their mind. They think that they are liberated only. And they keep with them avishuddha buddhaya, or impure intelligence. What is their impure intelligence? They have an aversion to surrender to Krishna, to serve his lotus feet. They have an aversion to that. This is at the core of the living entities being in the material world. This is called ahankar. When the living entity, Krishna Bhule, say Jeev, when the Jiva Bhule forgets Krishna, Anadiya Bhangmukh, he turns his back on Krishna. It's happened at some point in beginningless time. This is what happens, a turning of a conscious turning the back on Krishna. So this is impure, vimukta maninas. There's something impure in the heart, in the mind, in the intelligence. An aversion to Krishna's lotus feet. So although one may be performing so many austerities, thinking oneself liberated, due to this aversion, they fall down from their position. Aruha kristena, despite their austerities, param padam tata, despite their being situated in what they think is the highest position, even in the Brahma Jyoti, patyantya do andrita yuzmar, they fall down. Because there is no security, there is no rest, there is no shelter. And that is due to angrahi, the neglect of Krishna's lotus feet. Prabhupada's purport. Aside from devotees, there are many others, non-devotees, known as karmis, jnanis, or yogis, philanthropists, altruists, politicians, impersonalists, and voidists. There are many varieties of non-devotees who have their respective ways of liberation. But simply because they do not know the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, although they falsely think that they have been liberated and elevated to the highest position, that's vimukta maninas, they fall down. As clearly stated by the Lord Himself in the Bhagavad Gita 9.3, ashradadanaha purusha, faithlessness in the shelter of the Lord's feet, dharmasyasya parantapa apraprimam, they do not attain me, nivartante, and what in they return, mrityu samsara vatmati, to the path of death and repeated birth and death, samsara. Those who are not faithful on the path of devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of foes, but return to birth and death in this material world. It does not matter whether one is a karmi, jnani, yogi, philanthropist, politician, or whatever. If one has no love for the lotus feet of the Lord, one falls down. That is the verdict given by Lord Brahma in this verse. So many difficulties one may perform austerities, very severe austerities. And these people, some of these people, these yogis and jnanis, these are real tyagis. They're really renunciants. They can stay in cold weather They can immerse themselves in freezing cold water. They can surround themselves in the heat of the sun and fires all around to add more difficulties. They walk through the forests of the jungles, practically unclothed, just carrying metal axe. They walk through performing austerities, eating just somehow or another, maintaining themselves. Yet they will fall down. Dhruva Maharaj, this is from about halfway through Prabhupada's purport. Dhruva Maharaj at first wanted to achieve the greatest material kingdom and greater material possessions than his father. But when he was actually favored by the Lord, who appeared before him to give him the benediction he desired, Dhruva Maharaj refused it, saying, Swamin kritato asmid varam nayache. Now I'm fully satisfied. I've seen you. I'm fully satisfied. I do not want any material benediction. This is the perfection of life. Yam labdva chaparam lobam manyate nadikam tata. If one achieves the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, one is fully satisfied and does not need to ask for any material benediction. Because after all, one wants something because of a feeling of lacking something. Before a big feast, and if one hasn't eaten, one wants. But after the feast, even if someone comes around with wonderful jalebis and so many other things, no. Because the desire isn't there. One is full. The same food is there, but the desire isn't there. And the desire isn't there because the lack isn't there. The stomach is full. So similarly, when one actually attains Krishna, there is no more lack, there is no more desire. And if one has the whole material world paraded in front of him, like unlimited food after a feast, he's already taken. And he's satisfied. He doesn't want anything for himself. So therefore, Dhruva Maharaj was in that situation after seeing the Lord. He had no other desire. At night, no one can see a lotus. Why? It's too dark, yes. For lotuses blossom only during the daytime. Therefore, the word Aravindaksha is significant. One who is not captivated by the lotus eyes or transcendental form of the Supreme Lord is in darkness. Exactly like one who cannot see a lotus. One who has not come to the point of seeing the lotus eyes and transcendental form of Shyama Sundar is a failure. Have you seen the lotus form of Shyama Sundar? What can be said? Have you? You have seen Shyama Sundar?
I see the fountain. The
yes, they're successful. But you have to see Shyama Sundar. You should make it a point before the night ends to see Shyama Sundar. Can you help him? Maybe. You don't have a picture of Radha Shyama Sundar? Okay. Ah, there you go. Have to look at that form. Become attracted to the beauty of Shyama Sundar. One who has not come to the point of seeing the lotus eyes and transcendental form of Shyama Sundar is a failure. Premanjana Charita Bhakti Valochanena Santa Sadaiva Hridaye Suvalokayanti. Those who are attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in love always see the Lord's lotus eyes and lotus feet, whereas others cannot see the Lord's beauty and are therefore classified as anandrita yusmarangrahai, or neglectful of the Lord's personal form. Those who neglect the Lord's form are certainly surely failures on every path of life. But if one develops even a little love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is liberated without difficulty. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead recommends in Bhagavad Gita 9:34, Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyajimam namaskuru. Simply think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer some slight homage to me. Simply by this process, one is guaranteed to return home back to Godhead and thus attain the highest perfection. The Lord further affirms in Bhagavad Gita 18:54 through 18:55, Brahma Bhutta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakangshati Samasaveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param Bhaktyamam Abhijananti Yavanyas Tasmitatvata Tatomam Tatvato Gyatva Vishite Taranantanam. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state he attains pure devotional service unto me. One can understand the Supreme Personality as he is only by devotional service. This is Krishna's words. These are Krishna's words. And when one is in full consciousness of the Supreme Lord by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. So if one has a slight bit of devotion to Krishna, slight bit of attraction to his form, his going back to Godhead, it may take a little time, it may take maybe very quick, but his going back to Godhead is guaranteed. And if someone has many other powerful qualities, such strength of character, powerful renunciation, ability to suspend his breathing, powers, siddhis, so many things, but he will fall down to the material realm if he doesn't have devotion, if he neglects the lotus feet to the Lord of the Lord. Text 33. This is to the extent the demigods are saying, and they know from experience. O Madhava, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord of the Goddess of Fortune, if devotees completely in love with you sometimes fall from the path of devotion, they do not fall like non-devotees, for you still protect them. Thus they fearlessly traverse the heads of their opponents and continue to progress in devotional service. So there's a special benediction in being a devotee, and that benediction is Krishna is there offering protection, picking up what one lacks and maintaining what one has. Prabhupada's purport, we'll read a few of the sections. Devotees generally do not fall down. But if circumstantially they do, the Lord, because of their strong attachment to Him, gives them protection in all circumstances. Thus, even if devotees fall down, they are still strong enough to traverse the heads of their enemies. We have actually seen that our Krishna consciousness movement has many opponents, such as the deprogrammers who instituted a strong legal case against the devotees. So Prabhupada was writing this in Vrindavan probably in 1977. This entire volume was the last book that Prabhupada wrote. And there was a deprogramming case. The devotees were being challenged in New York. Big, heavy case. And Prabhupada has inserted that within his purport. We thought that this case would take a long time to settle, but because the devotees were protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we unexpectedly won the case in one day. Thus a case that was expected to continue for years was settled in a day because of the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Well, this was actually maybe perhaps in the latter part of 70. No, it was in 77. Just around Gopurnima time, I think. No?
When I had left in 77,
no, oh, sorry, it's in Kartik. Huh? Yes. But this was in 77, during the Gopurnima festival. Adi Keshava came. He was in charge. The case was against him. Well, he was one of the persons up for difficulty. It was 77, for sure. Thus a case that was expected to continue for years was settled in a day because of the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was promised in the Bhagavad Gita Kaunteya Pratijanihi Name Bhakta Pranashati. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. So two examples of the Lord's protection of the devotional service of a devotee. His one is Maharaj Chitraketu. He was cursed to even become a demon, and he became an exalted devotee in a demon's body. And his name, that the name of that demon was Vritrasura. Another example was Bharat Maharaj, who committed a mistake and remembered his pet deer when he died. And what happened to him? He became a deer, but that deer remembered his previous birth. And he took his next birth as Jadabharat, who wouldn't even talk to anyone. He was so determined not to get entangled in the material world. So in both cases, and the demigods are saying this, that Krishna protects the consciousness, the Krishna consciousness of his devotees. Prabhupada continues. The word Madhava is significant. Ma, Mother Lakshmi, the mother of all opulence, is always with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if a devotee is in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all the opulences of the Lord are ready to help him. Yatra yogeshwaro krishna yatra pata janajara tatrasi vijaya bhutir juvanitir matir mama. Wherever there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and his devotee Arjuna, Partha, there is victory, opulence, extraordinary power, and morality. The opulences of a devotee are not the results of karma kanda vichar. A devotee is always protected by all of the Supreme Lord's opulences, of which no one can deprive him. Tesham nitya vyuktanam yoga chemam vaham yaham. Thus a devotee cannot be defeated by any opponents. A devotee, therefore, should not deviate knowingly from the path of devotion. The adherent devotee is assured all protection from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The one who sticks, adherent, adhesive, something will stick. So that's what happened. That's the potency of taking shelter. And it's interesting that Prabhupada says that in the beginning, he starts the purport by saying devotees generally do not fall down, but if circumstantially they do, the Lord protects them. And then towards the end he says, thus a devotee cannot be defeated. A devotee therefore should not deviate knowingly. So a devotee, sometimes we use the term to mean the most exalted of souls, who would never even consider, due to his devotion, deviating. But here Prabhupada's saying that a devotee therefore should not deviate knowingly from the path of devotion. So he's speaking to us. He's assuring us all protection from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Don't leave the path. 34. Here in this text, the demigods will explain that Krishna descends. Now they're moving to speak about Krishna's descent into this world as avatar, as he is right within the womb of Devaki. And the purpose of it is to bestow good fortune by teaching the proper Vedic methodologies of worship. So the demigods continue. O Lord, during the time of maintenance, you manifest several incarnations, all with transcendental body, because there's the creation and there's the destruction and then there's the maintenance of the universe. So all of them, when Krishna descends to this world, all have transcendental bodies beyond the material modes of nature. When you appear in this way, you bestow all good fortune upon the living entities by teaching them to perform Vedic activities such as ritualistic ceremonies, mystic yoga, austerities, penances, and ultimately samadhi, ecstatic absorption and thought of you. Thus you are worshipped by the Vedic principles. So all these different techniques of spiritual advancement, they are meant to complement, they are meant to bring one to the point of devotion. So if one practices these, as we heard in the previous verse, the two verses ago, if one has the Vedic activities such as ritualistic ceremonies, mystic yoga, austerities, penances, samadhi, if one has those but neglects the lotus feet of the Lord, they will fall down. But on the other side, the proper purpose of these, because they're all prescribed in the Vedas, in Shastra, is to worship Krishna, to bring one to the point in worshipping Krishna through this. Yatta pravitabhutanam yena savamidam ditam. So one performs his prescribed duties, O Lord, be pleased by this. One performs some austerity, O Lord, be pleased by this. One performs mystic yoga to meditate upon the Lord. One performs penances and ultimately samadhi to capture the Lord within his heart and to not become distracted by the material world. So these are processes or aspects of the Vedic system that are meant only for worship of the Lord. And to do them without worship of the Lord, one will fall down, no matter how strong one is. We'll read from some of Prabhupada's purport, just in the middle. The modern activities of human society are described in Srimad Bhagavatam as the activities of Gokara, cows and asses. Saiva Gokara, because they are based on the bodily concept of life. Everyone is acting in a bodily concept of life involving society, friendship, and love for the improvement of economic and political conditions, and thus all activities are enacted in ignorance. The Supreme Personality therefore comes to teach us, the Prabhupada, or the verse the demigods are explaining the purpose of the Lord's incarnation, because people in the world are in ignorance. So like the sun comes to remove darkness, Krishna comes to this world during the time of maintenance of the universe to teach knowledge, which is light. So he comes to teach us how to act according to the Vedic principles. In the age of Kali, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared at Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and preached that in this age, the Vedic activities cannot be systematically performed because people are so fallen. And yet, the first hallmark of the fallenness of this age is that everyone thinks, yes, we are making advancement. We're advancing so well. Previous times were primitive. But what is the advancement? Just technological trinkets, but not advancement in happiness, not advancement in satisfaction, not advancement in peace and security, not advancement in freedom from disease, not advancement. No advancement, actually. Advancement in anxiety compared to the advancement of one's age. If one becomes advanced in age, it just means he's closer to death. So that type of advancement is there. So much fear is in the world. Fear in every activity. To maintain one's body, everyone's having a job, afraid of getting retrenched the corporation will be restructured. They make up names. What's the word for it? Not restructured. And there's redundant. They make up all kinds of fancy sounding words so no one thinks of what's really avoiding the actual issue of you being fired, you're unemployed. We're having a corporate downsizing. That's the one I was looking for. That means that you guys are all getting kicked out and you have no way to maintain yourself. Yes, we're having a corporate downsizing.
It's called a right sizing now.
Yes.
It's down as a negative, so they call it right sizing.
Yes. And you happen to be in the wrong size. The wrong side of the right size. So it's all language. There's so much politics in language. Instead of calling a killing the child in the womb clinic, they'll call it an abortion clinic. Or instead of calling it a slaughterhouse, what do they call it? An abattoir. Because no one speaks French. Because slaughterhouse, oh, it's a horrible thing. But an abattoir sounds somewhat exotic. You never take me anywhere. Okay, tonight we'll go to the abattoir. Oh, how nice. So everyone is so fallen and so much anxiety and difficulty from every side, fearful continuously. And therefore one's fearful, everyone's minds are so disturbed. So therefore, Mahaprabhu has given this recommendation from the Shastras. Hariyanama, 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 Vikevalam Kaloa Nasteva, Nasteva Gatiyanyata. In this age of quarrel, is this really the age of quarrel? Yes. People are disturbed by just a slight thing. And hypocrisy. Is this really the age of hypocrisy? The only means of deliverance is chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore teaching people all over the world how to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. And this has proved very much effective in all places and at all times. Text 35. The demigods continue. O Lord, and remember, Krishna is in the womb at this time. O cause of all causes, he's in the womb, and he's still, regardless of his position, he has a transcendental body beyond the modes of material nature. He's always the cause of all causes. He's always the Lord. If your transcendental body were not beyond the modes of material nature, one could not understand the difference between matter and transcendence. Only by your presence can one understand the transcendental nature of your Lordship, who are the controller of material nature. Your transcendental nature is very difficult to understand unless one is influenced by the presence of your transcendental form. So unless Krishna's transcendental form, unless Krishna is present, the darkness of the material world doesn't allow one to see the difference between spirit and matter, Krishna's form and the material forms. So Krishna's presence is required for that in one way or another. Otherwise the darkness of ignorance is too thick. Prabhupada's purport. And Lord Brahma, in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, he'll say, people may say that they know something about God. This is after Krishna has exhibited because Brahma stole away all the calves and the boys, the cows and the boys. And then when he came back in a moment, which was a year of earth time, he saw that the cows and the boys were still there, even though he knew that he had taken them away. And then he saw Krishna revealed to him that these cows and boys were actually Vishnu forms, expansions of him, fully powerful, unlimited expansions coming from Krishna, all unlimitedly powerful. So Brahma said, people may say that they know something about God, but I will never say that. There is so much difference between your transcendental body and my body that I cannot even make the comparison. So only in the presence of Krishna's transcendental body can we understand the difference between transcendental and mundane material. Otherwise, one may see, and there are so many people who say that they're God. We are all God, but we have forgotten, and I am realized, so I am God. Be still and know that you are God. This one's an incarnation, that one's an avatar. So popular. So in ignorance, people can accept an ordinary person as God, but as soon as one glimpses the light of the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by understanding what God is, no one can be fooled in that way. Krishna's body is composed of Satchit Ananda, eternity, bliss and knowledge. He doesn't have to go to the... Prabhupada once said about there was one so-called incarnation of God who was popular in the 70s, a 16-year-old boy or so, who was some kind of a yogi. And his followers were saying that he was God. And Prabhupada knew that at one point he had a toothache and he had to go to the hospital. So he just mocked it, that this is not what happens to God. And of course he eventually ran away with his beautiful secretary, Western girl secretary, and then his mother became angry at him and rejected him and said, he's no longer God. He's no longer Krishna. But he had an older brother who she said, now he's God. He's Balaram or something like that. So all kinds of insanity. This is all due to darkness of ignorance. So if one isn't in touch with Krishna's transcendental body, one cannot understand what, because of the nature of the ignorance of the material world, one can't understand what transcendence is. So Prabhupada's report explains, we'll read a few sections from this. Devotees who awaken their transcendental nature, in the presence of the Lord, and who follow the rules and regulations of devotional service, can understand Lord Krishna, Lord Ramachandra, and other incarnations, who are not of this material world, who come from the spiritual world for the benefit of people in general. So one has to keep himself in the presence of Krishna. That's the whole idea. And how to do that? Krishna is so kind. Nam nama kari buhuda nivasava shakti tatrapita namitasmaranena kala itadrisi tava kripa bhagavan mamapi dudaiva middhishamiha nanujanu raga. Krishna is so kind, abhina tvam namanamano. He's no different from his name. So that is the simple way that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is recommending, to keep always in the presence of the Lord, so that the darkness of Maya will not overcome us, by always being in the presence of Krishna's holy name, having Krishna's holy name always dancing upon one's tongue. And while doing that, following the rules and regulations of devotional service, such persons can understand Lord Krishna, Lord Ramachandra and other incarnations who are not part of this material world but who come from the spiritual world for the benefit of people in general. If one does not take to this process, one imagines or manufactures some form of God according to material qualities and can never awaken a real understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word bhaktimam abhijananti yavanyas chasmi tatvata signify that unless one worships the Lord according to the regulative devotional principles, one cannot awaken the transcendental nature. Deity worship, even in the absence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, awakens the transcendental nature of the devotee, who thus becomes increasingly attached to the Lord's lotus feet. How nice. In the presence of the Lord, in the form of the deity, because of course deity is an English word that comes from the Latin word that means God. Deity means literally God. So one who worships the deity puts himself in the presence of the Lord, Sri Murtye Shraddhadanaya Sevara, with great faith worships the deity. One makes very rapid progress. And what's that mean? He becomes increasingly attached to the Lord's lotus feet. And if one doesn't have knowledge, one will think that the deity is an idol. And so therefore the Shastra gives us the methodologies. And then what will he thinks that the deity is an idol, but what will he think is God? He'll think God, how will he imagine God? As an old man with a beard or something like that. Because he thinks that God is the oldest. By definition, he's the creator. So therefore, he existed before the creation. Therefore, he's older than anything in the creation. So therefore, how old he must be. So he must have a really long beard and a really wrinkly skin. I once heard Vedanta Maharaj say that when people like that conceive of God, and I've actually even seen a Bible little pamphlet with a picture of some old man, faceless old man, sitting on a throne with a long beard. So Vedanta Maharaj said, well, how old is he? So if the picture in the beard, the picture of the man with the beard, he's like maybe 90 years old or something like that. Because if he was like a million years old, just imagine how long his beard would be, or imagine how wrinkled he would be. So even according to them, he can stop his aging at 85, say, or something like that. So if he could stop at 85, why can't he stop at 16? Which is what Krishna does. If he can stop at 85, which would he rather stop at, 16 or 85? So, a funny point. So, this is imaginary, that God is an old man with a beard. So, Prabhupada explains, men influenced by the three modes of material nature imagine their own God according to the modes of material nature. In this way, God is presented in various ways. But your appearance will establish what the real form of God is. That's what the demigods are saying. Now Prabhupada's going to paraphrase the demigods' prayers. And this is in the two-thirds of the way. Dear Lord, the demigods prayed, when you appear in your different incarnations, you take different names and forms according to different situations. Lord Krishna is your name because you are all attractive. You are called Shyama Sundar because of your transcendental beauty. Shyama means blackish, yet they say you are more beautiful than thousands of cupids. Kandarpakoti Kamaniya, although you appear in a color which is compared to that of a blackish cloud, you are the transcendental absolute, and therefore your beauty is many times more attractive than the delicate body of Cupid. Sometimes you are called Giridhari because you lifted the hill known as Govardhan. You are sometimes called Nandanandana or Vasudeva or Devaki Nandana because you appear as the son of Maharaj Nanda or Devaki or Vasudeva. Impersonalists think that your many names or forms are according to the particular type of work and quality because they accept you from the position of a material observer. Because they are in Maya, they see materially, they see Krishna as having a material body. Our dear Lord, the way of understanding is not to study your absolute nature, form and activities by mental speculation. One must engage himself in devotional service, then one can understand your absolute nature and your transcendental form, name and qualities. Actually, only a person who has little taste for the service of your lotus feet can understand your transcendental nature or form and qualities. Others may go on speculating for millions of years, but it is not possible for them to understand even a part of your actual position. In other words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna cannot be understood by the non-devotees because there is a curtain of yoga maya which covers Krishna's actual features. So no one can understand without devotional service, because by devotional service, Krishna reveals himself. So we'll read one more verse and purport. O Lord, your transcendental name and form are not ascertained by those who merely speculate on the path of imagination. They try to understand by their own power. Your name, form, and attributes can be ascertained only through devotional service. Prabhupada's purport. As stated in the Padma Purana, Ataksi Krishna Namadi Nabhavet Grahyam Indriyai Sevan Mukhi Jivado Swayam Eva Sparatyada. One cannot understand the transcendental nature of the name, form, quality, and pastimes of Sri Krishna through one's materially contaminated senses. Only when one becomes spiritually saturated by transcendental service to the Lord or the transcendental names, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord revealed to him. Saturated, fully immersed and absorbed, the consciousness has absorbed absorbed devotional service, absorbed in devotional service. Then, by Krishna's mercy, one can understand. Since Krishna and his transcendental name, form, and activities are all of a transcendental nature, ordinary persons or those who are only slightly advanced cannot understand them. So this is all preparatory for us hearing Krishna's wonderful pastimes that will be revealed in the 10th canto. O Lord, the demigods say, the impersonalists who are non-devotees cannot understand that your name is identical with your form. Since the Lord is absolute, there is no difference between his name and his actual form. In the material world, there is a difference between form and name. The mango fruit is different from the name of the mango. One cannot taste the mango fruit simply by chanting mango, mango, mango. But the devotee who knows there is no difference between the name and the form of the Lord chants Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And he realizes that he is always in Krishna's company. For persons who are not very advanced in absolute knowledge of the Supreme, Lord Krishna exhibits his transcendental pastimes, meaning if one is not one may be a devotee, but he's not advanced in Vedanta study or something like that. For that person, Krishna exhibits his transcendental pastimes. They can simply think of the pastimes of the Lord and get the full benefit, because Krishna is actually there in his pastimes. He's there in his names. Since there is no difference between the transcendental name and form of the Lord, there is no difference between the transcendental pastimes and the form of the Lord. For those who are less intelligent, like women laborers or the mercantile class, the great sage Vyasadeva wrote Mahabharata. In the Mahabharata, Krishna is present in his different activities. Mahabharata's history, and simply by studying, hearing, and memorizing the transcendental activities of Krishna, the less intelligent can also gradually rise to the standard of pure devotees. So this is the process that Krishna is recommending, that Prabhupada is speaking of. But the pure devotees, who are always absorbed in the thought of the transcendental lotus feet of Krishna, and are always engaged in devotional service and full Krishna consciousness, are never to be considered to be in the material world. Srila Rupa Goswami has explained that those who are always engaged in Krishna consciousness by body, mind, and activities are to be considered liberated even within this body. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Those who are engaged in the devotional service of the Lord have already transcended the material position. Krishna appears in order to give a chance to both the devotees and the non-devotees for realization of the ultimate goal of life. The devotees get the direct chance to see Him and worship Him. Those who are not on that platform get the chance to become acquainted with His activities and thus become elevated to the same position. The Brahma Samhita 5.38 says, Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santa sadaiva hridayeshu vilokyanti yam sham sundaram chinta guna sarupam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Although Krishna's transcendental form is presented as black, devotees who are in love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead appreciate the Lord as Shyama Sundar, having a very beautiful blackish form. The Lord's form is so beautiful that the Brahma Samhita also states, Venum kvanantamaravinda dalayataksham bahavatam samasitam burasundaram gan kandarpakotikamani avaseshashobam govindamari purusham damaham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who plays on His transcendental flute. His eyes are like lotus flowers. He is decorated with peacock plumes, and His bodily color resembles the color of fresh black cloud, although His bodily features are more beautiful than millions of cupids. This beauty of the Supreme Lord can be seen by devotees who are in love with Him, devotees whose eyes are anointed with love of Godhead, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochane. The Lord is also known as Giridhari or Girivaradhari because Krishna, for the sake of His devotees, lifted Govardhan Hill. The devotees appreciate the Lord's inconceivable strength. But non-devotees, in spite of directly perceiving the Lord's inconceivable strength and power, regard the Lord's activities as fictitious. This is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. Non-devotees cannot give any nomenclature for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet, the Lord is known as Shyama Sundar and Giridhari. Similarly, the Lord is known as Devaki Nandana and Yasoda Nandana because He accepted the role of son for Mother Devaki and Mother Yasoda. And He is known as Gopal because He enjoyed the sport of maintaining the cows and calves. Therefore, though He has no mundane name, He is addressed by devotees as Devaki Nandana, Yasoda Nandana, Gopal, and Shyama Sundar. These are all transcendental names that only devotees can appreciate and non-devotees cannot. The history of Krishna, the person, has been openly seen by everyone. Yet only those who are in love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead can appreciate this history. Whereas non-devotees who have not developed their loving qualities think that the activities, form, and attributes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are fictitious. Therefore, this verse explains, Nanama rupe guna janma karma bina rupatavye tavatasya shakshina. In this connection, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has given the example that persons suffering from jaundice cannot taste the sweetness of sugar candy, although everyone knows that sugar candy is sweet. Similarly, because of the material disease, non-devotees cannot understand the transcendental name, form, attributes, and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although they actually see the Lord's activities, either through authority or through history. The Puranas are old, authentic histories, but non-devotees cannot understand them, especially Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the essence of Vedic knowledge. Non-devotees cannot understand even the preliminary study of transcendental knowledge, Bhagavad Gita. They simply speculate and present commentaries with absurd distortions. So, we'll stop here. Long purport, a lot of reading of purports. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions?
You suggested that someone be Shyama Sundar, but what we have are representations of Shyama Sundar, and Shyama Sundar has a particular form, like you have a form and he has a form. If we take a photo, we know that's you and we can recognize it, but various artists have represented without actually seeing, shall we say, the actual.
But they were guided. That's how Prabhupada answered that question. There's shastric guidance coming through the guru. So the devotees didn't just, when they painted that picture, they just didn't paint a picture of Krishna according to their whim or imagination. It was direct. Actually, this particular one was copied from an ancient Bengali print. But what I was thinking of was Radha Shyama Sundar in Vrindavan, Krishna Balaram Mandir. So is that a representation or is that actually Shyama Sundar?
That's Shyama Sundar. That's different.
Is it?
And that.
According to your realization, yeah. But according to someone whose vision is more exalted, they can.
So if I decide to, I'm an artist, should say, and I decide to do a picture of Rama Shyama Sundar without taking instruction from the guru, is it not? How does that stand in relationship to that picture?
You're talking about the deities in particular.
No, I'm talking about
if they follow the shastra, if there's direction, then and they're not guessing. Well, he must be like this, and he must be like this.
I've watched, say, Ramakrishna.
No beards and stuff like that.
Okay. I've seen Ramakrishna, who said he's drawing.
But he's trained also already.
Alright.
Yes.
But the visual features are different in each one.
So which one is the real Krishna? So that's not true in deities also?
Yes.
See, if one worships the deity with love, then proportionally Krishna manifests himself. Even though there's difference in features, which one is the real one? The real one is manifested by Krishna with love. And a non-devotee may see that and not see beauty. But because of the love of the devotee, Krishna reveals his beauty to him.
I would say each deity is Krishna. There's no question. I mean, that is Krishna. But this is a representation.
But why? What's the difference between a deity and a painting?
I'm not sure. I'm thinking about. If I draw a picture of the deity.
Or how about in your mind?
Yeah.
The deities, there are six different items that the deity can be made out of. Six or eight.
I guess, in a sense, it's culturally, because we do have photographs, which is a recent phenomenon. Somehow we see reality as photographic. And if you took away the photograph, then.
No, it didn't start with the photograph. It started with the mirror.
Yeah.
That's when everyone's, the mirror was the invention that ruined everything. Suddenly everyone, oh, what do you know? What's your name? Now that shifted everyone from accepting reality through hearing, and the books and things like that shifted the people from accepting reality as hearing to seeing. But still, I mean, we can easily understand that our eyes can be fooled, and you look at a picture that one time attracted you, and then when your mind changes at a different time, it's not attractive at all. So similarly, but in reverse, if one has love for Krishna, Krishna kindly reveals himself through the picture, through the deity, if you have devotion. So one can worship a picture of Krishna, painting a picture also. I heard Prabhupada even on a tape say this today. He said that you can worship a picture of Gaunatai, and how to worship, by chanting. That's the worship. Did you want to say something?
It's interesting to note that when you look at the very, very old deities compared to, say, Rosh Hashanah,
yes,
they appear to our eyes to be kind of crude.
Yes.
Like if you see Radha Govinda and Govinda, they don't even have really hands, fingers, they just sort of have lumps. And the old deities in Vrindavan are all like that.
Well, how about the ones that are more reliefs almost, as opposed to...
Yes, older still.
Yes.
So, and that's going back a long time.
So in Kali Yuga it needs to accommodate more to the mentalities of the people, so the deities are...
Yeah. So sometimes one can feel scornful that, you know, this is all, because that's the whole thrust of Kali Yuga, is that we're going forwards. In the past was barbaric, and we're making so many strides forward in our sophistication and so forth. So when you see the representation now and the skill and the beauty of the hands and everything, you can think, you know, of course that was old times, but it's very hard to understand the mentality of the people who, for example, when Uttara saw the deities of Radha Govinda Gopinath, and Radha Mohan said that Gopinath was the representation
of Krishna.
When we see something.
It's certainly beautiful, though.
Yeah, and striking and powerful.
Or Govinda. But when you see it, have you ever seen Radha Govinda in Jaipur?
Yeah.
Huh?
See photos,
but because the people there have so much devotion, that pulls out the devotion in one's own heart, and the deity is so powerful and beautiful. And if one was left on one's own, if one had no devotion, one might not see it in that way. It's devotion. One doesn't see with one's eyes. That's the tricky thing. One sees with one's mind. Because if you think about it, that there's unlimited, like the way that the eye is composed, it just gathers unlimited information, practically, so much information, and sitting on the retina, but it's organized into things that are, it's organized by the mind. So therefore, if someone's doing some like a magic trick or something like that, he takes something that you're common, that's common and that you're expecting, and he's doing something that's unexpected with it, and you won't see it. You won't see him doing it because the mind expects one thing. You follow what I mean? Yeah. So the eyes, it's the mind that's everything. So that's the same thing. So when the mind is full of devotion, Krishna reciprocates with that and reveals himself. But it's a very interesting topic. And this is basically what Prabhupada is explaining. Not only the deity, but Krishna himself With Krishna himself, the same thing is true, because a non-devotee who has aversion to Krishna, when he sees Krishna, he doesn't see Krishna. Avajananti mamuda manushantana mashrita parambhava majananto mamabhuta. He doesn't know. Can't see. And Sisupal saw Krishna and wanted to kill him. Santavakta wanted to kill him because of that envious mentality. Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Sri Krishna ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.